Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and it's great to have everybody joining us. We've been talking off and on for the last several weeks about Hurricane Matthew, and we decided to, we've been talking about the U.S. response, but we've not been touching too much on the international response. It struck Haiti, the Bahamas, portions of Cuba, and so we want to talk a little bit about some other places and how they're faring and what kind of response went on there. And we'll do that here in a little bit. But of course, we can't get on with the rest of the show until we get on with the rest of the show with Sam Bradley. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Jamie. It's good to be back. I just had another educational trip to California and just got home, so it's good to be home. I'm gonna hunker down for the winter and do some writing and podcasting and whatever else. And our friend Jim Logan, the Sasquatch, got a hold of a very nice lady that's going to talk to us about her response to Haiti tonight, so we're looking forward to that. We got Dr. Joe with us too. Hi, Dr. Joe.
Hey guys, good to be here.
And Jamie, there's never a week that we have to worry about something happening in the world and in the way of disaster. So we had some pretty nasty earthquakes in Italy this week, eh?
Yeah, we actually had a 6.6 magnitude tremor that hit a few days before we recorded this. In the central part of Italy, in the mountainous region there, it's sparsely populated. But the worst part about it is that it's old, rustic, villages, most of the construction is centuries old, so not much there is built to withstand any kind of earthquake of any kind of magnitude. And so we've lost, from an antiquities perspective, it's significant in the respect of 700, 800, 900,000 year old churches and buildings collapsing. Oh. But we also have just massive displacement of people. A lot of people were not there because this is the same region that had earthquakes back in a few months ago. And so a lot of people left and didn't come back. So there wasn't a huge loss of life or a ton of injuries. But the people that are there are really getting scared of being in that region for a while. And that seems to be the displacement of people, which we've seen here, people in shelters from the hurricanes, people in shelters from flooding. And of course, these people in Italy, central Italy, are in shelters because it's not safe to go back to their homes. And it's significant.
Yeah, it's so sad to lose that much history, but I get the impression that up until recently, that area probably didn't get a lot of earthquakes or those buildings wouldn't still be standing, so that's really sad.
Yeah, it is, and so, again, this is rural communities, close-knit, small communities that, in some cases, they said that everybody in an entire village have decided to just move elsewhere. And so these are going to be ghost towns in some cases because nobody's going to live there. The buildings aren't safe to inhabit. And so it's really a shame.
It is, but it shows in a sense that they're kind of smarter than we are. We keep going back to the places that keep falling down and going underwater and catching fire and rebuilding and to do it yet again. So at least they're keeping themselves safe, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's true. So that's the news item for the week, and these things, like you said, we don't seem to have any kind of shortage of things to report on when we do our weekly recording. So this is the item I picked this week. There were some other things going on. There's some wildfires and things like that on the West Coast, and so there's always something we can pick.
That's true, even though hurricane season's finally wandering down. I think Matthew took us out with a bang. Of course, I'd have to knock on wood there because one never knows about hurricanes. But, well, I guess we're rushing into cold weather season, so I'm sure that'll bring a few things our way, especially with you guys on the East Coast.
Well, if you believe the almanac, it says we're going to have an extremely snowy and cold winter. So if you follow those kind of things and you want to believe them, time will tell if they're correct or not.
Well, Jim and Joe and I will be there to dig you guys out, so no worries.
Sounds good.
So, Jim, just to say hi to you, how are things down there in Memphis?
Oh, we're doing great. So things are moving along wonderfully. So Joe and I are home for a couple weeks of rest, if you want to call it that, not on the road. So the last couple months have been very busy for us with Paragon.
I know. You guys have been going crazy. It's nice to know you're finally factoring a break in there, but also good to know that Paragon is so busy, because it's a good thing. You're out there training a lot of people and how to manage their systems and deal with disasters and active shooters and everything else that you do. So I can't believe we're all home at the same time. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, but it's kind of good.
Well, thank you again for bringing Carol to us tonight. Carolyn Singleton, what I know about her is she's a nurse practitioner who responded to Haiti. So she's going to tell us a bit about that. So welcome, Carolyn.
Hi.
So we're going to, you're not real familiar with our format, but basically we want to start with knowing a little bit about you and how you happened to be in Haiti for this hurricane.
Well, it started out as a medical mission trip through Pine Lake Madison Church. It was kind of headed up by the Hispaniola Mountain Missions, which is based out of Jackson. And they have a god named Mishael there that he lives in the Dominican Republic, and he took us to Haiti. So
this was a church mission. Do you do regular events in Haiti or elsewhere?
Yeah, it was medical mission.
Okay. So this was sort of a planned event that turned out to be some unplanned, an unplanned hurricane in there?
Yes.
Well, we've heard a couple cases. In fact, we had a listener some time ago that contacted us, and she happened to be in, I believe it was Taiwan when the...
I think it was the Philippines, actually.
Was it? You're right, Jamie. Yep. Yeah, it was. Wasn't Haiyan?
I believe
so. The big typhoon that came through. And the interesting thing about that was, well, she wanted to jump in and she wanted to help. And she ended up becoming, wanted to learn everything she could learn about being a disaster responder. So, you know, sometimes...
Yeah, part of what happened with our trip, too, was in response, we ended up doing a lot of help and risk recovery while we were there, too. The last 3 days we were there, actually.
So what does your group normally do? Do you do this annually, or, you know, how does your group generally function?
Pine Lake has several churches. So we were actually the third relief team over there. The second team was out of, I think, the reservoir Pine Lake, and a lot of university medical center people went. There was a physician, a nurse practitioner, and several nurses. But on my trip, there was a nurse, me, two dentists, and we did a lot of, I treated a lot of cholera, and the biggest problem for them was food and water.
Yeah,
and hydration, that type of thing.
That always seems to be the case. Where exactly were you?
If I'm saying this right, Once a Pietra, which is near Pedernales.
Okay.
It's a little village.
What's the population like there?
Oh, it's tiny. I don't know the exact population, but it's tiny. And they're not near. They're like 6 hours from the Port of France. So if they need a hospital, they're maybe 4 hours from that.
Wow.
Yeah. So how would you get those people to the hospital? Just by whatever means possible?
The thing about where we were, they send a lot of medical teams through, so they have a surgical team coming through next, which is, I think, in the next month or so. But there's not a lot they can do. The hospitals are 4 to 6 hours away, and had we had a severe situation, that would have been a bad deal. We did have one baby that was born in a house made of, this is one of the problems that they had from the hurricane, where some of the homes being lost were homes made of clothing, homes made of blankets, homes made of bamboo, mud, you know, the babies born out in that were, it was a bad deal. So we saw a lot of death while we were there too.
Yeah, I have a little bit of familiarity with that because I'm a member of the federal DMAT, and there is a religious group within the DMAT that goes, I think, like 3 or 4 times a year. They go to an area in Haiti where they set up a regular clinic, although I can't remember where. And these people, walk for days out of the mountains just to get down there to get, you know, take advantage of their care because it's the only regular care that they have. So I know it's very austere there and is only made worse by a hurricane. And you're right. Yeah. I mean, things like food and water, you know, that we take for granted are huge, especially after a disaster.
Even the fruit that they normally would have, they don't have right now.
Really? Dr. Joe, I think you got a... Joe, I think you have a question for Carolyn. Yeah.
Hey, Carolyn, it's Joe. I was just curious about a couple things. Could you tell us a little bit about the different kinds of diseases that you saw? I know you mentioned cholera, which is obviously not one we'd see in the U.S. very commonly, but were there any others? And also a little bit about kind of what are you able to do for folks there? What would treatment of a situation like cholera entail in the situation that you were in?
Well, we did have medications that were available to us that were brought in. We didn't bring them in; they were there, brought in by this company out of Jackson, and we were able to deliver antibiotics, antidiarrheal medicines, antiemetics, that kind of thing. But you know, it was very limited, and we did have infected wounds and things like that. We don't have tetanus or anything like that, so. The wounds that we saw, you know, the most we could do was treat them with antibiotics and the very few types of dressings that we had. It's still a bad situation over there.
Joe,
very limited.
Just for the benefit of all of us that aren't as familiar with cholera as others of you may be, how contagious is that especially within that type of population? And what is the risk to medical providers that may respond there, like Carolyn?
Well, it's you know, tends to be waterborne from contaminated water, so it's pretty easily shared. It's not necessarily easy to pass from person to person, but, you know, people tend to be sharing their water and bathing water and all that sort of stuff. So it's certainly an issue.
Right, and they're bathing in a river that's contaminated. A lot of them are bathing in the river that's contaminated, so that all of them get sick. It's just a bad situation.
So so I think from a provider perspective, obviously having your own source of water that's separate from the population that you're treating is obviously imperative, or at least being able to treat the water before you drink it or bathe in it, et cetera.
Right.
And how familiar are the locals with that kind of thing and understanding that the water can cause this illness, or is it just a function of this is what we got, so this is what we have to deal with?
I think that they pretty much understood what cholera was. They didn't call it that, but they knew that they were sick. And when they came, they knew they needed the antibiotic for it.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of diarrhea, a lot of stomach pain, a lot of nausea, dehydration from that. The children were the ones I was most concerned about because we did have a lot of children that had, lots of diarrhea and abdominal pain. A lot of that.
And I do understand, you know, it's in situations like this, as often is the case, it's often the extremely young and you know, the young and the old that succumb to these types of illnesses because of the nature of the dehydration and the continued problem keeping food and fluids down until they can recover.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of dehydration. Everybody's heart rate was elevated and no fluids. So.
Wow. Jim, did you have any thoughts or questions for Carolyn?
No, I think no questions, just some thoughts. I mean, this area just seems to be in the way of everything bad the last you know, like 50 years, right? With hurricanes come through there, you know, routinely, and then the earthquake a few years back. And so I would imagine, if we can think about the issues that we've had here in the States with things like Katrina and Rita and all those hurricanes that displace people, if you could magnify that by, I don't know, 100, and still here we're recovering from those events, I can't even imagine, because these people seems like every 6 months they get hit with something else. And so it's probably something that's, you know, Carolyn said, you know, they understood what cholera was and they knew what they needed. But I think that's probably because, you know, almost every 6 months they get hit with an issue that takes them back into the cycle of this disease process and these conditions trying to rebuild. So it's, you know, like you said, Sam, it's we keep going back to these places, and these people have no choice but to stay in these places. So that's what makes people like Carolyn special and important, that they keep, you know, going on these mission trips to help where they can.
Oh, I agree. And to some extent, I think that's kind of how a lot of the people on my DMAT really started engaging more with the Haitians and going there more regularly. They just, you know, they feel so badly for these people. And the other thing, too, is they're so appreciative. I mean, this is what I kept hearing. I did not go on the response with my DMAT, but they are, because they're just not used to, especially people coming from the United States, to help them in any way they can. And they really appreciate that. That kind of segues into my next question for you, Carolyn. How does this affect you personally? I don't know what your disaster experience has been, if there's been many or a few or just the first one, but how does this affect your interest in going back and doing something like this again?
First of all, I didn't want to leave, but I definitely want to do it again, because it makes where you are look like such a small place, and all of our little troubles seem so, you know, microscopic comparison to coming to a place like that where, you know, there's no money, there's no way to get anywhere, there's no way to get help. There's just no help. I mean, these people have high blood pressure anyway, and we're not talking about a little bit of high blood pressure. It's really high blood pressure, and there's no way to get the medicine. Even when we give them, you know, we don't know if they're going to get refills of the medicines, and it's such a remote, poor area that if I could have stayed there and done what I was doing and could just keep doing it, I would have. I would love to go back. I would love to go back every month if I could.
That's really good to hear, because, you know, there seems to be two kinds of people: the ones that get into an austere environment like that and then want to run away and never go back, or the ones like all of us, I would say, that, you know, just fall in love with disaster response and the people we help and just have that drive to go back and right. Do it again. Well, you know, maybe
they appreciate it.
Exactly, and that's huge.
They appreciate it. Yeah,
that's huge, and to some extent, they appreciate it even more than sometimes Americans do, because Americans expect that level of disaster response, but yeah. You know, the Haitians certainly weren't expecting it, and that's really cool, and yeah. That's why Joe and Jim and I keep going back, right, Joe?
Absolutely, that's exactly it.
Well, who knows? Maybe we'll end up in Italy or something. You never know. We're doing a lot more. In fact, Haiti was the actual, during the earthquake, as Jim mentioned, that was the first international response that we went on. And it was kind of a real surprise that, you know, they were asking us for passports, because we didn't even realize that was in our purview to go overseas somewhere. So it really was, you know, as much as many of the team had done disaster response, going to Haiti was a real eye opener. So we can truly appreciate what you're talking about. So, well, who knows? Maybe there's going to be an opportunity for you to go back, and or maybe your people or someone you can connect with might be able to go back and start doing some regular clinics. It sounds like that's something you'd be interested in.
I would love it.
Carolyn, this is Joe again. Could you talk a little bit about the preparations that you guys had to do before you went? And I'm thinking sort of in terms of really kind of personal preparations. Were there any particular vaccinations, for example? Did they recommend you take any certain medications with you, or kind of what was on your to-go list of things to make sure you had?
We prepared ourselves for cholera, for one thing. We took Cipro. I took Doxy and Cipro. I took some with me, and I took, you know, the medicines for the symptoms. I had to get a Hep A vaccine. I got, I made sure my Hep B titer was good, and I got my tetanus updated, my Tdap updated. And that was really all that was required going over there. And everybody had Cipro with them and, you know, took it during the week. Everybody got a little bit of an illness somewhat from, I don't know if it was from the food or what, but everybody a little bit, you know, everybody got a little bit sick at one point in time during that whole entire week. But part of it was the food, I think. I don't know that for sure, but yeah, well, so that's really all that we could do. And we did take the things that we prepared for, where we knew that we weren't going to have any ability to communicate through internet and that type of thing, where we're so used to all that. We were in such a remote area, we didn't even have any service like that. So,
well, that's a good point. I mean, something the locals may be used to, as Americans, we're not. So would you say that's true, Joe, that we kind of get exposed to things that our bodies may not be prepared to normally deal with?
Oh, I think there's no question about that. You know, I think it really just, it's kind of why I was curious, just to see if it was, you know, if there's anything sort of unexpected or, I guess, different from, you know, the last big response to Haiti for a lot of U.S. folks was during the earthquake that Jim mentioned before. And I really was just kind of curious to know if there were any new issues that were popping up there since that terrific or terrible incident many years ago.
Yeah, nothing new that we haven't already heard about before we got there, except for, you know, if you didn't think about skin infections and things like that, that kind of thing is happening. But,
well, Carolyn, another question I had sort of related in terms of preparation was, if, you know, especially in given that some of your people may not have, you know, gone to such an austere environment, what do you guys do, or what do you get in terms of training just to kind of prepare you for what you might see there?
The people that we went through do this all the time, and they have several places in Haiti and Dominican Republic that they place people in, place teams in. And so they sort of prepared us and got us ready with what we needed to take and pretty much what we needed to prepare for and what we needed to do before we went, in preparation of, you know, for example, the cholera. You know, when we got to Haiti, that our electricity was through a generator. We had that, we had electricity. So it was just so, there was so absolutely nothing where we were. It was so, so sad.
Yeah, I can imagine. And it is really important, I think, to, you know, and you hear about, you know, we've talked a lot about on our show over the last couple of years about people that want to self-deploy, or they kind of create some kind of ad hoc team, and they really don't know what they're getting into. I mean, you know, training should involve everything from, you know, dealing with diseases like you had, getting vaccinations, what to expect from the people, certainly security issues. And I'm glad to know that you went through an agency that was familiar with Haiti and their unique situation and helped you prepare for that. So, you know, kudos to them for that, because I hate to see somebody run into a disaster situation and be mentally unprepared for it and come back, you know, with a negative.
The only other thing we worried about was Zika, and I did not see that. And even in the Band-Aid Station Hospital that they had, they didn't have that. And in Dominican Republic, in their hospital, we were in Bajarona, and they did have that in their hospital, a baby there with that. But we didn't actually experience any of that.
Well, let me ask you one final question on that. If I was preparing to go on a similar mission to Haiti, what would be the words of wisdom you would want me to know?
Oh, gosh. Well, definitely take snacks. They eat a lot of rice. No, I'm kidding. But the vaccinations, I think, and the preparation that we did with antibiotics, I think, were very important. I felt comfortable being there. And, I think the one thing we didn't have that we saw a lot of were asthmatic type symptoms that we didn't have medication for. We didn't have, that was the hardest thing for me because I couldn't help those people. So we did have prednisone and prednisolone and that kind of thing, but we didn't have all the medications that we need. So I think that would be another thing, is if you were going on a mission trip like this, to find out what medications were there before you went, to make sure you didn't need anything else. And little things like bandages and thermometer probes, for goodness sake. We didn't have all that all the time. So
good point. And people coming right out of an ER into that environment aren't really going to think about those things because they're so used to having them. So, Jamie, I'm thinking, you and Joe and Jim and I ought to maybe write the book on, what every disaster responder needs to know. What do you think?
Well, I think that, Jim and Joe are the experts there in so many ways. But, I think the one thing we've picked up doing this show over the years and from our own personal experiences have been that every situation is different. Joe, you had access to a lot of some things when you were traveling around North Carolina, dealing with the flooding and the aftermath of Matthew there, but there were still some things that you didn't have enough of, correct? Oh, don't know if Joe's there. Hold on.
He probably didn't take himself off mute.
Listen, I can say this too, that tarps are needed there because for the homes that are made of literally clothing and sheets or blankets or bamboo weaved together or mud, they really do need tarps and that kind of thing over there to cover their homes. Just to stay a little
point.
Bit dry.
Good point. It's just so basic. Having a roof over your head. Good point. What were you thinking, Joe? I think you had another comment there.
So I've learned how to use the mute button, first of all.
You just don't remember how to turn it off sometimes.
No, but relative to Jamie's comment, there's never enough of what you need in the place that you need it. And, it just sort of falls back to that, disasters and disaster response in many ways is sort of the ultimate resource management exercise in getting people supplies, equipment, power, sanitation, everything you can think of is a resource of some form. And it's trying to put together systems that allow you to figure out what it is that you need and then to get what you need and then to get it there and then to use it. Having all those things available to you and how to use them, how to call for them and then actually get them into play.
And that's
the interpreters too are important because your communication with these people is vital that you're communicating and getting across to one another what's going on and what you're wanting to do for them. So I had a great interpreter who worked with medical teams a lot. So if he walked out of the room for 5 minutes, it just, everything fell apart. So that's very important.
Oh, really good point. Yeah. And to your point, Joe, it's one thing when that's part of what you were doing in your role with USAR, but if you're within the United States, it's altogether different than when you're in another part of the world in a very austere environment. It's not like you can just call somebody up and say, hey, deliver some tarps out here, please.
Oh, absolutely. And Carolyn just touched on another great resource, right? You got to have interpreters. And you know, trying to do all that in a country that's not the United States just adds complexities on top of complexities to make any of those systems work at all. So, you know, the international side of disaster response has got a whole additional series of challenges to it that we take for granted to some extent here in the U.S.
Well, Carolyn, thank you so much for sharing your experience. And we always learn something new from everybody we talk to. And I hope that you get to go back someday and see those folks. And it sounds like you're definitely one of those who is struck by the disaster bug and will be looking for the next one. But speaking of the next one, Joe, what's you and Jim, what's next for Barragon coming up in a couple of weeks? You got something coming up?
Let's see. I have two big trips coming up, one to New Zealand and one to the United Kingdom on some of our cadaveric work with CPR research and all that sort of stuff. We've got another big training opportunity with military special forces guys coming up in a few weeks, and we're going to both enjoy a little downtime to recoup and regroup and get ready for an already busy new year.
Awesome.
Okay, y'all might need a nurse practitioner there, Joe.
There you go. Absolutely.
Speaking of international training, I'm glad to hear that, Joe. That's excellent.
So, Joe, you know, when somebody needs to reach out to you or Jim, you know, or maybe somebody wants to see about if you need another member of the team, like Carolyn said, or maybe they want to bring you in to teach them a little bit about what you called the ultimate resource management exercise of any disaster ends up being in some way, shape, or form, where can they reach you at Paragon?
Well, they can certainly find us here through the Disaster Podcast or on our website, ParagonMedicalGroup.com. You can find us on Facebook under the same name, and our Twitter feed is ParagonMedEDU.
And we just want to thank you again. Your continued support helps us bring this program to people out there, and we get to share the information from people like Carolyn. So hopefully we can continue to bring this information and connect people with you, because I think that you bring a unique set of training resources to the community out there. And I'm always happy to hear that you guys are busy, even though I know you guys get crazy busy sometimes. I know there's open weekends and weeks out there if people need somebody to come in the new year. Now's the time to start booking things up. So reach out to them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you guys have been so innovative. I mean, it's not just the regular training you do, but now the research that you're involved in, and now you're even going international with that. So I can't wait to see the next thing that you come up with at Paragon. It's going to be exciting.
So, Sam, where can folks find you?
Well, the usual social media places under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11, certainly on our Facebook site. So please come over and visit us there. And certainly on the disasterpodcast.com website, where we hope you will come and leave your comments and give us some ideas of what you want us to talk about. How about you, Jamie?
Well, of course, you can find me under the handle PodMedic on most social media platforms. And we want you to join us over on our Facebook page especially. So just search Disaster Podcast. Our Facebook group will come up and just request to join it. You have to request it to get in and become a part of the group, but it's easy to do. And we'll just go ahead and click accept when you do that. And we post episode links there. We post pictures. Joe got some great pictures that he was able to share with us from his response to Matthew. It's just becoming a great community of people involved with disaster response and austere medical resources. So we really appreciate you continuing to support us over there. And of course, the disasterpodcast.com, where you can also leave comments and comment on an episode or a question for one of our guests. And we'd be happy to connect you with them that way. Sam, I hear Carolyn talking about what she did in Haiti, and boy, I'll tell you, if that isn't an example of what we talk about every week here on the show with regards to medical care in a disaster setting, I don't know what does.
That's for sure. And I hope Carolyn will stay in touch with us and let us know what her great next great adventure is going to be. But that's just another example, probably one of the more prime examples of the fact that disaster medicine is not our everyday medicine.